Welcome to the Rent Estate Podcast, a conversation on how you can achieve retirement security, financial freedom, and the new American dream through rental property investments. And here's your host, Kevin Ortner, CEO of Renters Warehouse.
All right. Thanks for joining us and welcome to another episode of the Rent Estate Podcast, where we talk all things real estate investing and particularly focus on single family rental property investment strategies. I'm your host, Kevin Ortner, CEO of Renters Warehouse. We're one of the nation's largest single family rental property managers in the country, helping our clients achieve financial freedom through real estate. Today's episode is part of our Corner to Corner series, where we're having conversations with talented leaders from Renters Warehouse across the country and diving into specific characteristics of their market. So what makes their market unique, local trends that we're seeing in that market, and other investment tips for real estate investors. So today, I'm really excited. We have Mark Hansen joining us. Mark is our market leader for the Twin Cities, otherwise known as Minneapolis and St. Paul in Minnesota. This is where we're based. We're based in the Twin Cities. So I get to see Mark on a regular basis, but we want to get him on the show talking about Minneapolis specifically. So Mark, thanks so much for giving us some time and coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So, you know, before we jump in and talk Minneapolis and all things Minneapolis, Minnesota real estate investing, why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners and tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. I moved up here to Minneapolis in 1991 to go to the University of Minnesota. Did some other things first before real estate, but got my license in 2006 and worked for another brokerage where we kind of specialized in HUD foreclosures, which for those people that don't know is a property that was purchased with an FHA loan that goes into foreclosure. The government retakes possession of the property, and then they would hire a brokerage like ours to list those properties for the government. So had some experience working with investors because those properties tend to get gobbled up by investors. And then came here to Renters Warehouse about 9 years ago in 2015. I spent my first 3 years here as an agent out in the field, putting together deals, moved into the office and spent about 3 years as the sales director. And then the last 3 years, as Kevin just mentioned, I've been the market leader here.
Wow. It's been 9 years.
Nine years.
Flies. We're having fun doing a lot of things. And you skipped over a big segment of your background, which is your golf career, which we don't have to get into today. That's for another show. But for those who don't know, Mark, a fantastic golfer and dedicated a lot of time to that before you got in real estate. But I mentioned that because how did you go from golf to real estate? Like, what was that transition? What attracted you to real estate?
Well, I had played on the Canadian tour and some various mini tours, tried to make it on the PGA tour for about 6 years after college. That's what brought me up here to the University of Minnesota. It's a golf scholarship. And then, you know, I got to the point where I started having some kids with my wife, and my wife said, hey, we either need to make this or we need to start making some more money. So actually my mother-in-law was a broker at a company, and she said, well, go out and get your real estate license. Anybody can sell real estate. So that's, I'm like, wow, I like homes. And originally I was kind of to that HGTV kind of ultra salesman type. And I quickly realized I preferred working with investors. And not really describing the granite countertops and those types of things, and much preferred talking numbers and, hey, does this property make sense for you to buy as an investment?
Got it. Yeah, that's fun. So, you know, when we have company golf outings or things like that, Mark's always the guy you want on your team. He's the ringer, but unfortunately, everyone knows he's the ringer. So it goes there. So, okay, interesting. Transition from golf to real estate, but you've been doing this a long time and you've been with us almost 10 years at Renters Warehouse and helping investors identify new properties, lease homes, and now you're running our largest market in Minneapolis and overseeing a large team that's helping people lease homes and find homes and all that kind of stuff. So a wealth of knowledge we're going to be able to get from Mark today on the Minneapolis market, what makes it unique and special and all that kind of stuff. And I think that is a great transition into, you know, what makes, from your perspective, you know, for a real estate investor who's listening and maybe invests in Minnesota. So we're going to make them, you know, reinforce that, hey, this is a great place to be, or someone who's looking to diversify and get into Minneapolis for the first time. What makes Minneapolis a unique place for real estate investors, or what makes Minneapolis a good opportunity for people to come in and buy homes here?
I think some of the institutional buyers have kind of overlooked our market. And I don't know specifically what the reasoning behind that. My guess is they're afraid of our climate. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're sitting in an office in New York or, you know, Los Angeles, wherever you might be, you think of Minneapolis as kind of the frozen tundra, and you're probably dealing with frozen pipes and, you know, water damage in the winter and utilities going out and all that type of stuff. I think that's a piece of it. We also are very heavily regulated here, as far as city licensing requirements and all sorts of things that you have to have in the lease and disclosure laws and all those types of things. So I think those are the two things that kind of keep that institutional branch out of our market more so than other places, which really affords a good opportunity for people like our customers, you know, our clients who, they get kind of first pick a lot of times at some of these properties that are on the market. As far as, you know, the market itself, I kind of view Minneapolis as like the solid B student. Like, it's just very consistent. It's not super flashy. It doesn't get a bunch of A's. Doesn't fail a lot of courses. It has, you know, really solid yields, but there's probably some places where you can go for a little bit better yields throughout the country. As far as home price appreciation, we kind of fall in that, again, that kind of, you know, B plus category. And it's just seems really consistent, and that's why I invest here in, you know, in my rental properties. Mm-hmm.
So I think
you agree with that?
Yeah. Look, I was taking some notes and some interesting things that I wrote down about, institutional activity being much lower in Minnesota. There's some, but not very much. Winter and, you know, the note I wrote was steady Eddie, right? The B student, as you refer to, which I like hearing about. So let's actually dive into a few of those a little bit more, right? Institutional activity in single family rental homes, as people have probably seen in the national media, you know, hit a fever pitch a couple of years ago. It's slowed down quite a bit right now as things are resetting with interest rates and some things like that. But, you know, a lot of activity. You know, that said, I always like to point out that institutional buying, while it makes national headlines, still accounts for less than 3% of all the single family rental properties across the country. But it's certainly focused in pockets, right? The Southeast, you know, the Smile States, people like to call it the Sun Belt, you know, from Florida and Georgia through Texas and Phoenix, a lot of concentration there, not so much in the Midwest and certainly not so much in the North. So I think you're right. And that does afford for retail investors, as we affectionately call them, those who own fewer than a large portfolio of homes, an opportunity that's different than maybe buying in Atlanta or buying in even Dallas, because it's not being so quickly picked from those institutional clients. So I think that's a really important factor and probably allows you to help your clients, you know, either identify that great first property or building out of their portfolio, you know, and have a lot more properties maybe to choose from and be a little less competitive. Is that kind of what that lack of institutional buying really means?
I think so. Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, there's you know, enough properties to go around probably in any market, to your point. But having them kind of step aside, it almost is like, you know, the golf course that never has a bunch that's really nice, but never is very crowded.
I look at it. There we go. You need to tell me which ones those are. And I think you're right. I don't know, you know, entirely why Minnesota and some of the other, you know, great Midwest states have been looked over by some of the institutional investment. You know, you can get same or similar returns from a yield perspective in the upper Midwest and specifically Minneapolis as you can in some other markets. It might be lower than the Southeast, but compared to other places where there is investment happening, you know, it's certainly there. And, you know, so it probably is what you mentioned. The winter is, there's a lot of unknowns and can cause some challenges if you're not managing it appropriately. And the regulation. So I think that hones in close on, or something else we should dive a little bit deeper into around, what that really means, right? How do you, if you're an individual investor and maybe you manage your homes yourself and you're not employing a professional property manager, you know, what are things you got to be looking for and be careful for in a climate like Minnesota, where sometimes 6 months out of the year, it's cold, right? I think that's an interesting fact, is a lot of people that have never been to Minnesota think it's cold year round. It's beautiful here for many months, but also very, very cold for some months. So let's talk two things. One, winter property management. What are things, you know, people need to be thinking about and ensuring that they're doing to avoid issues that can come with winter? And then number two, we'll dive into some of that regulation you talked about second, but let's talk about that winter first. And what would be your advice, you know, to investors around the challenges that, you know, a cold climate can provide?
Sure. You know, it's kind of a glass half full, glass half empty to me conversation. The severity of what our winters can do to me ensures that the property is going to be built with quality materials, which, you know, in the South, if, you know, insulation's not necessarily as important as it is up here.
Right.
And for me, like, my advice to investors is you don't have to worry about the winter as long as there's people in the property, because they will let you know if the heat goes out. Right. It's when you have those vacancy periods where, yeah, you probably should make a few extra trips to the property or have your management company head out to the property to make sure that the electric's still on and, you know, get a cold snap come through, you know, get some eyes on the property. But if as long as there's tenants in the property, like I said, they're going to let you know instantly when that furnace goes out and there's right. an issue. So,
right.
Yeah. So that's
not,
part,
it's not as big of a thing as people make it, right? Like you said, right. most of the time the houses are occupied. If they're not, if they're on the market for lease, make sure you're checking on it more frequently, which is something we do in some cases. And in many cases, we may winterize the home if it's going to be vacant yep. for a couple of months. Winterize means drain the water out of the pipes, get the house to a place where if the heat did go out, there's not going to cause damage. And it's not a huge expense, but it's something you need to be thinking about and doing proactively, which is one of the handy things of having a professional property manager helping you out in sure. your property. So on the regulation front, you mentioned this, and we haven't talked a lot of about regulation on the corner to corner series here yet. It's come up a little bit in some markets that we've been talking about, but you know, Minneapolis is becoming known for putting a lot of localized rules and regulations on investment properties and rental properties and their landlords and managers. You know, so what are some of the, you know, big ones for you think that people should be watching out for and that you helped your clients work through?
Sure. It kind of falls into two buckets. Number one is I'm quickly learning that not every city and every throughout the country requires rental licenses for properties. That seems to be a little bit unique here. So there's that whole process of getting your property properly licensed, which is what part of my team does pretty much full time, is handle those inspections and get the paperwork filled out and, you know, turn that into the city to, so that you have a proper rental license. So that's one piece of it. The second piece is they've been passing a lot of laws, regulations, whatever you want to call them, on what you have to disclose in ads, how the lease has to look, all those types of things. So I feel like, especially the last couple of years, I've spent a lot of time with our compliance team going through these new changes and rules and getting us kind of up to speed, so to speak. When I first started 9 years ago, quite honestly, as an agent, I felt like, you know, the sales pitch to use us was we gave you back time. You know, like all the things that we do, we could probably do a little bit more efficiently, probably end up having statistically better results than a do-it-yourselfer. But, you know, a person back then could put a property on Craigslist. They're going to get some phone calls. They can go out and meet people, show the property, run a background check, put the lease together, all that type of stuff we do. And I used to tell people, you know, our value is you're paying us a fee to give you all that time back, you know?
Right.
The way it is now, I mean, if I had a friend, family member thinking about renting out a property, especially in Minneapolis or St. Paul specifically, I would say you need to hire somebody that can navigate all those kind of landmines that are out there in the as far as the regulatory piece of it goes.
Yeah. And I think super important topic, right? Because there's numerous, from resident approval criteria, what you can, you know, deny people for and what you can't, That's ever changing at a very local level across the country, but it's happening more and more in places like Minneapolis. So no matter where you're investing, that is probably an issue. It's always changing. And so ensuring that you're up to speed on that or are working with someone who's always up to speed on that. And then that rental licensing piece. And again, it's just time, right? And so as we talk to investors about, hey, Minneapolis is a good place to invest for the long term, you know, of course, we're talking about the challenges of what maybe isn't putting some of that institutional dollars to work here, which creates that opportunity. But it's not to scare people, right? It's to say, these are things to look out for. And they're not necessarily challenging topics to get over. It just takes some time. And obviously understanding the process like you and your team do makes that a lot easier for your owners.
Right. Definitely.
Great. So that's something really to keep in mind for, you know, kind of a nugget. If you're listening and you're taking away some notes, is these things we talk, minus the winter, maybe you don't get that in every market, but this regulation and the ever-changing compliance, really important to stay up to speed on what those changes are in your local market, wherever you're investing. And if you're investing out of town, meaning you live in Florida, but you're going to invest in Minneapolis, harder to do, being able to outsource that work to someone who's constantly up to speed on it, then it's not an issue, right? You can outsource those headaches to someone else who has a team in place to be able to handle those, navigate those challenges. But because it can be more time intensive for someone who's, you know, building a portfolio on their own, or the small investor might keep out some of the larger investors because it's just more headache. And it might, make it appear that there's not as much value because you got to put more time in. But really, that's what creates some of the great opportunity, is having the right partner in place and being able to do that. So kind of a key takeaway there. The third thing you mentioned about the Twin Cities really is the great B student, right? Steady Eddie around housing price appreciation and rent growth and some of those other things. And again, national headlines will say, you know, during the pandemic, housing prices boomed, and they did pretty much everywhere. But some markets were certainly more affected than others during the great, you know, housing downturn and real estate recession of, you know, 2008, 2009. You saw markets like Phoenix, Arizona, and Florida, and some others, you know, they were up 120% and then down a lot. Big ups, big peaks and valleys. And, you know, I was born and raised in Minnesota, spent some time in Arizona and back. You know, you look at the historical trends, to your point, and it's, you know, there's dips and peaks and valleys, but it's much less than other places. So, you know, with that background of the Midwest, I think being a little bit more rational with the markets in real estate, what's been happening the last couple of years around home price appreciation, rent growth, and how has that either created challenges or opportunities as a real estate investor?
Home price appreciation has stayed fairly consistent, like you said, you know, up and to the right, you know, solid returns on that. And same, I would say, with rent prices as well, except for we did see, and I don't know if it's specifically COVID or honestly with the George Floyd, you know, civil unrest downtown Minneapolis, we've seen pockets of Minneapolis and St. Paul that haven't been getting that rent price appreciation. In fact, in certain, you know, zip codes and areas, it's actually gone down a little bit. And I think it's a combination of, you know, of what happened that summer. And then also, with COVID, I think, you probably remember when, you know, Target Field went in, they started building all that stuff in the North Loop and all kind of the sexy modern downtown condos and down, they put in the US Bank Stadium and everybody wanted to get downtown. Mm-hmm. And with COVID happens, George Floyd happens. And all of a sudden people are like, you know what, I could use a little elbow room and I can get out of the cities a little bit. Sure. So I think they overbuilt a little bit down there. The last couple of years, we've seen a little bit of dip in those areas, but the last probably 12 months or so, it's actually kind of leveled out, I think. And I think now we're going to start to see, as kind of life gets hopefully back to normal, those prices kind of start ticking back up again.
Yeah. So that's interesting. Again, investing anywhere can be hyper-local, right? So we've been doing a series on Denver and Minneapolis and Phoenix and Dallas and all these places. But inside of those markets like Minneapolis, there's a different story as well, right? Which is why it pays to make sure if you're thinking about investing anywhere to be reaching out to a professional in that market to talk about what's happening. inside of the city of Minneapolis itself, talking about a little bit of rent decrease the last couple of years. What's been happening in the, say, some of the suburb areas where some of those folks have been moving to? Are rents steady? Are they going up? Are they coming down? What's happening outside of the city?
Yeah, literally you go 3-4 miles in any direction from ground zero. And, it's time moves on and everything's, clicking away at that, 3-5% rent price appreciation. Same with annual home price appreciation, kind of falling in line with that as well. It's just those certain pockets. And also, quite frankly, Minneapolis, downtown, they're kind of the king of that regulation that we were talking about before. So there are challenges down to owning rental property there. So I'd warn people to be careful of it, but it also presents some good value on prices down there as well.
Yeah. Anytime there's higher regulation, creates opportunity because some people don't want to deal with it, right? It's not just Minneapolis. It's a lot of large cities across the country that put a lot of burden on real estate investors when they're coming into that inner city and the urban core. And I think it's counterintuitive to me what they're doing. They're trying to ensure that they're getting, good investors or good landlords or improving the quality of the housing there by putting a lot of this regulation in place and fees to do things and inspections and all this kind of stuff. But it really ends up oftentimes discouraging people from going in because it's just more expensive. It could be higher risk because of the added expense. And real estate investors are generally the ones that'll go in and improve a neighborhood, right? They're going to go in and find a home that's undervalued. It's got deferred maintenance on it. Bring that house up to standards, do nice improvements and rent it out to people who need a place to live in those cities. But when you continually put more and more burden on top of an investor, it steers people away. And, again, that's not just Minneapolis. That's a lot of the urban core, which is why a lot of times we're directing people to maybe suburbs because there's a little bit less restrictions there. And again, it's not that we want our clients, skirting around, creating a good home for a resident. We don't want to work with those types of clients. We want to work with people who want to provide great housing and create good investment for themselves for the long term. It's just much easier and cheaper to do outside in some of these suburb markets. So with that nice transition to, if you're talking to an investor today and they wanted to start buying homes or a house in the Twin Cities area, what are some areas, specific neighborhoods or parts of the city that you would direct them to and say, hey, this is a great place to start because?
Yeah, there's not really, there's no like real blighted areas of the Twin Cities, St. Paul, Minneapolis metro. So you're in a general sense, you're kind of safe no matter, I think, where you go. There are some pockets that I personally like better.
What are those? And how come you like those?
Okay. I like kind of on the West End just because it's I think you can still get value price-wise. And I don't think it's kind of caught up with how nice it is yet. You know what I mean? So I like that. I also like, even if you go a little bit further out, because, if you get that kind of second ring of properties, that's when you can really find, you don't see as much of a fall off on the rent price, but you start to see, if you can get outside of Hennepin County, like into Wright County, that's where my properties are. I have a lot of my tenants that are driving downtown to work, but it's only maybe 2 or 3 days a week. And it's a 30-minute, 40-minute drive each way, but they're willing to transition and do that because they're getting an acre, they're getting a place to have the dog run out and jump in the pond and all that type of stuff. So that's what I like personally. But I have investors that we work with here at Renters Warehouse that have apartment buildings, and duplexes and stuff right downtown as well. So it's, again, being kind of that steady B student, it's really a kind of, in my opinion, a market that's kind of hard to mess up in,
A lot of opportunity wherever you are, right? A lot of opportunity wherever you are, yeah. Wherever you're going to buy. What do you think is the highest demand from residents who are looking for homes, right? Is it, are condos back in style? They kind of went out of style during the pandemic and most markets where people were, I think they called it urban flight, or, you know, fleeing to the suburbs or whatever it was that they were calling it. Is that still happening? Or, you know, should we be looking at condos, or is it a, you know, starter house, as people like to refer to them as, three bedroom, two bath home, you know, in the suburbs that is in higher demand right now? Would you say?
Yeah, I always say that our biggest competition, or an investor's biggest competition, is with that first time buyer. So if you think of, you know, the young couple getting together, you know, buying their first property, whether that be, you know, the three bedroom, two bath townhome, you know, in the first rings of suburbs, that's what investors typically, I think, are competing with, because those are the properties that are going to rent, you know, 24 hours on the market. You've already got five or six showings lined up on it. So that's kind of what I direct, either, or like that, you know, maybe 1985 built Rambler, three bedroom, two bath, 1500 square feet on a quarter acre lot. You know, that's what gets my blood pumping when I see those go up at a reasonable price, because that's what, you know, sure, it's nice to have the 3,000, 4,000 square foot home on Lake Minnetonka, but good luck finding somebody that can afford rent out there, you know?
Right, right. Yeah. So kind of the standard, you know, it's a theme we're seeing, right? The three bedroom, two bath, four bedroom, two bath home with a yard, good school district, you know, almost in any market, that's going to do great. It sounds like the same in Minneapolis for us. And really goes to show that, you know, as you're thinking about building a real estate investment strategy and what type of home should I buy and where should I buy it, like, the best rule of thumb I tell people is the same type of house that you think someone might want to buy is what they want to rent, right? There's a lot of people who, frankly, can afford to buy a house today, but they choose to rent. They might be here for a couple of years in a job, and they're trying to get to know the neighborhood. And so if you can find something in, you know, that you personally would say, yeah, this is a great neighborhood, I like this place, I'd buy a house here, I'm going to buy a house here as an investment, probably a great rental property, right? Good school district, good size for a family, a growing family, whatever that might be. I know across our portfolio of homes at Renters Warehouse, that's really what we call bread and butter, right? Those 3-2s, 4-2s, 4-3s. And it sounds like that trend is continuing in Minneapolis with those properties renting pretty quickly.
Definitely. Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
So, you know, let's go back to the macro of Minnesota a little bit, because I was looking at my notes and we talked about winter, and I think there's some stereotypes of Minnesota, maybe put it that way, or people who have never lived in Minnesota or been in Minnesota of, man, how can you live there? But Minnesota continually earns, you know, top places to live when it, you know, whenever magazines or whatever place ranks them. And it's due to the healthcare system we have here. It's due to the employment, and the amount of employers. It's due to, you know, recreation and schools and all the things we have in our community. A lot of great schools, highly ranked public school systems, and all that kind of stuff. But we've been trying to touch a little bit on employment as we're looking at different markets to invest in, because I think an important aspect of choosing your next market to buy a home is, you know, what kind of jobs are there? What kind of industry is there? Is it stable? Is it diverse? Are people moving to Minnesota versus leaving Minnesota? And it's interesting, you know, having been from Minnesota, or being from Minnesota, I talked to a recruiter once, and they said one of the hardest places to recruit people to is Minnesota, because it's, you know, it's not New York, it's not Chicago, it's not LA, it's cold sometimes. But also on the flip side of that, once people are there, the hardest place to recruit people away from Minnesota. And so I think it's an interesting kind of two-edged view of that. So I say all that to set up this question of share with the listeners, you know, some of the big employers of Minneapolis. I think it'll blow people's mind of the type of employers we have in Minneapolis. A lot of Fortune 500 companies, large, stable businesses, great industries. So let's talk a little bit about that. What kind of, you know, big employers are here, and job opportunities do people have when they're moving to Minnesota?
Yeah, and I think the piece that we didn't touch on, and I don't want to get into it necessarily here today, but I also oversee Rochester market, and Minnesota in general is known for their healthcare. I mean, that is one of our biggest industries. We have a very well-educated population. You had mentioned the school districts that we rank in the top 10 nationally in schools. So it does attract those Fortune 500 companies to set up base here, basically. So, and I think it also helps our location, you know, that we are central. You know, our airport is really busy. It's a, you would know that better than probably anybody on this call, but, you know, so we do get a lot of traffic through here. And like I said, between, you know, I don't know if you want me to name names, but
yeah, let's run through
General some Mills, Honeywell, you know, all, you know, Land O'Lakes, what are some other
healthcare? We've got United Healthcare here. We've got Medtronic,
Boston Scientific,
US Bank's based here. The world's largest privately held company, Cargill, based in Minneapolis. So, you know, if you pull up the list of Fortune 500 companies, there's like, I want to say it's like close to 10. Minneapolis, 10 or 11 or 9 or something like that. Cargill, privately held. So a lot of high paying jobs, stable jobs across a diverse base of industry, from healthcare to food and agriculture, all that kind of stuff. It attracts, you know, a lot of people to the state. It keeps a lot of people here, as well as once you move here, you realize it's a pretty wonderful place to be, which creates long-term tenants, right? And creates demand for these homes that we're talking about, especially in some of the outer ring suburbs, as you're mentioning, Wright County, et cetera. So you brought up Rochester. We should talk for a minute about that. I almost forgot. You oversee our Rochester market as well. And Rochester, Minnesota is unique because it's like almost all healthcare, right? That's for people who don't know, Rochester, Minnesota is home of the Mayo Clinic, and people flying from around the globe to go get their healthcare and visits and other things done at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester. So talk a bit about Rochester and, you know, what makes Rochester unique and a good opportunity as well for investors.
Yeah, it's kind of our forgotten stepchild sometimes, because we do so much of our business here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, but you know, Rochester just kind of keeps plugging along. It's to me, it's a market that's kind of designed for rentals, because a lot of people go there to do internships with the Mayo Clinic. In my opinion, they've overbuilt Rochester with apartments. Mm-hmm. And I think they're not really taking into account who their clientele is. I mean, they're doctors, you know, I mean, they have money. So right. They don't want to be shoulder to shoulder in a tiny little apartment. They want to have some elbow room, you know, for their dogs and the kids and to run around in the yard and stuff. So if we get a home that kind of fits that bill, we get it on the market, it's gobbled up in seconds down there.
Yeah, it's incredible investment happening in Rochester, right? I don't remember the total amount of investment, but turning it into the medical destination center, right? Or city, right? Between the Mayo Clinic and the city of Rochester, it's 80 million or 100 million or some huge number of investment into additional facilities and infrastructure to support the Mayo Clinic and all the jobs that come with it. Right. And so that is definitely a growing market. And interestingly enough, might make sense. I mean, Minneapolis, St. Paul, millions of people, Rochester and kind of some of the surrounding communities, 300,000 to 400,000. So home prices are a little cheaper. Rent is as well, but probably a great opportunity to buy cash flowing properties in Rochester. So maybe one last question as we talk about, you know, cash flow specifically, you know, a concern of real estate investors today is interest rates. Interest rates at the time of recording this in early 2024, 22-year highs. We've seen incredible increases in the interest rates, you know, to fight off this inflation we've been seeing, which creates challenges in buying homes that cash flow. So can you still find those opportunities in Minnesota to, you know, purchase a home 20-25% down and not only be able to take advantage of the long-term housing price appreciation, paying down that debt and all the things we talk about that, you know, are great pieces of owning real estate, but can you get enough rent to cover, you know, the increased cost of ownership today?
I think you can. What I've seen with the investors that I'm talking to is it was definitely easier 3 or 4 years ago, for sure. I mean, no questions about it. But what I've seen is investors that kind of stayed away from capital improvements are now, in order to get that cash flow, saying, I'll buy this, distressed, you know, terrible property, but I'll buy a property that I have to put $10,000, $15,000 into, because that makes the numbers work then, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah.
So I'm seeing a lot more of that, where people that didn't really want to, you know, again, it's, we talked about with the regulation and all the other things, there's pros and cons to having investment property. One of the cons some people say is, I don't want to go in and have to make a bunch of improvements, but those same people are now, I'm willing to do that if the numbers, you know, come out on the spreadsheet the right way after doing it. So that's what I'm seeing more of, which I think actually, you know, again, glass half full, glass half empty, it's helping our, you know, our community take some of those properties and turn them into nicer homes.
Yeah. And a place that residents want to live. Right. And that's another great takeaway is, in this more challenging environment for real estate investors and finding deals that work, there are deals that work, right? If you look at the national numbers, we've talked about this before in the podcast, but when the numbers from National Association of Realtors comes out, you know, the percentage of homes sold or the number of homes sold as investments is down. But really, that's a lot driven by that institutional investment that we opened the show talking about. You know, they're kind of on the sidelines waiting for things to reset across the country. And but a lot of deals are still happening. And the deals that are happening are smaller, newer, entrepreneurial type investors, retail investors who, you know, can spend a little bit more time on one or two homes and can identify that property that's right for a little bit of an improvement. And frankly, it's still, I think, ripe for, you know, the buy, renovate, refinance, and rent, you know, what people refer to as the BRRRR strategy, right? There are still those types of properties that exist. Get a property that's a little bit distressed at a lower price than what market might be, put some repairs into it. Oftentimes you can refinance and have still 15, 20% down into that property, which is where you want to be, and get cash flow. Just takes a little bit more work. And it takes having the right team to help you do it. So with that said, does talk about how your team in Minneapolis will help an investor through that process. If they want to identify something that does need a little bit of work, like, do they have to do the work? Who's doing the work? Who's helping them put the plan together? You know, how does that come together? Since that may be a great opportunity for investors right now in Minneapolis.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the approach that, you know, I try to get my team of agents to take. It's a kind of a holistic approach, like, let me help you identify the properties that I find of good value. And it, you know, the ones that kind of work really well on the spreadsheet are the ones that need work. So It's almost like it, you know, if it's too good to be true, there's probably a reason why. So What I tend to do is just plug the numbers into the spreadsheet. Okay, this one's kicking off this incredible yield. Now what's wrong with it? You know, and then that's when the eyes on the ground, whether, you know, it's one of my agents taking someone on a showing to show it to them, or actually just going there and documenting, hey, this one we need, you know, $8,000 in the kitchen and, you know, $5,000 in the bathroom, but now then we're up, you know, we're ready to go on market. Then you put those numbers back in, and that's when you can find, in my opinion, the good deals. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great. And your team can help with that process from A to Z, start to finish. You know, but we not only do we work with new investors, we talked a lot about new investors, people coming in to buy their first or their next property in Minneapolis, but, you know, a huge swath of your customers and your clients today in Minneapolis are those who maybe have owned homes before they worked with you, or before they worked with us at Renters Warehouse. And why are you seeing, what do you think is the common reason that people are saying, you know what, I'm either doing this myself and I'm going to move this to professional management, I'm going to use Renters Warehouse and Mark's team, or maybe they have a different property management situation that they're not happy with and they're switching over. You get a lot of that. And what do you think are the main drivers behind people making that switch?
I would go back to kind of the two things. You know, like I said, when I first started here, it was we gave you back time, you know, and the do-it-yourselfers, anybody you talk to about investing, they're going to say, yeah, I'd like to have at least a portion of my portfolio in real estate, but I don't want to deal with the headaches. And that's where we can come in, obviously for a fee, but it'll give you that time back. And then we become that buffer between you and the headache, is like how I like to phrase it. Mm-hmm. Whether that be the property itself or the tenant, you know, we kind of build that wall between you and the tenant where They don't have to know your name. They don't get your email. They don't get your phone number. They're calling us with their problems. And then, you know, we're relaying that information on to you, but we kind of serve as that wall between, you know, the downside of real estate and the good part of it.
Right. Well, this has been great, Mark. Thanks for joining us today on the podcast and sharing your wealth of knowledge about Minneapolis. You know, I think some of the important takeaways, right, are a little less competition from the national buyers in a market like Minneapolis and certainly Rochester. Some great opportunity there because there's less competition with investors out in the market. A lot of opportunity still exists if you want to put in a little bit of work into a property. It doesn't have to be tremendous, but a little bit of work is going to help create that cash flow, and you can still get that today, even with the interest rates. And then there can be challenges in this market, like any market, around regulation and some of the other things that having the right team and the right partner can certainly help you overcome. So a lot of great opportunity in Minneapolis. If someone wanted to reach you and your team to talk more about this and develop their own individual investment strategy, how are they going to reach you?
I don't have the number in front of me. I should, but they can just call in to Renters Warehouse, or I would probably just start at renterswarehouse.com and then just select Minneapolis as the office, and that'll get to my team.
Check us out at renterswarehouse.com. That's our website. You can get all of our markets there. You can get directly to Mark and his team in Minneapolis. They can help put together an investment strategy, talk about what your goals might be in real estate, help you with current property management needs that you might have, wealth of knowledge here in Minneapolis. And we've got a lot of other great resources there on renterswarehouse.com. You can check out rentestaterevolution.com. That leads you to the book. Mark has it nicely displayed there back behind him. That was perfect. And that book we wrote several years ago about putting together your real estate investment strategy, why to invest in real estate, the advantages, how to take advantage of appreciation, depreciation, tax advantages, all those things that come with it, leveraging other people's money to buy investments can be found in the book. So you can check that out if you want to learn more about that. And of course, you know, access the podcast through wherever you listen to your podcasts, and also at rentestaterevolution.com. So thanks for joining us, Mark. And thanks to the listeners for listening to us as well. If you liked this podcast, please be sure to like and subscribe so we can get the word out to more like-minded real estate investors. And Mark, until I see you next time, thanks a lot.
You've been listening to the Rent Estate Podcast with your host, Kevin Ortner. If you enjoyed today's show, head over to rentestate.com for a free rental property analysis and learn how you can list, invest, and rent all under one roof.